Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to
Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist. This is the podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspectives.
Hey.
Hi.
So this week, I think we are mainly going to be talking about one thing, primarily. I have another thing to kind of talk about at the end, just for a little pick-me-up after what is sure to be kind of a bit of a heavy episode. So let's just jump right in. On Sunday,
yep,
I got a text from a group chat that I'm in with old coworkers of mine, and it said that Kobe died.
Yeah, I got to go to the Grammys on Sunday. Not like the main ones, but like the ones before. And I was with the child I take care of and his mom, and we were having lunch, and Max's mom texted me and was like, Kobe died in a helicopter crash. And I Googled it, and literally 10 minutes before TMZ had posted.
Right. That. So when she texted me in the group chat, it literally, she must have, or someone she knows must have an alert from TMZ, because I texted her back because I Googled Kobe.
Yeah.
Nothing came up.
Yeah.
Same. And I texted her back and I said, I think somebody's playing a joke on you.
Yeah.
And then she linked the TMZ article and it had been posted like 3 minutes prior.
Yeah.
And then after that, everyone else started picking it up. And so let's kind of just start right there, first of all, because TMZ did report it, which to me felt really gross.
Yeah, it's gross for a lot of reasons, and for me, the number one reason that it's gross is because they hadn't notified the family yet. So
right.
TMZ was reporting it to everybody.
Families. Right, multiple families.
Yeah.
Like, because the other people in that helicopter, they knew that their loved ones were with Kobe that
exactly.
day.
Exactly.
So multiple families are now wondering what happened. It was also reported on because now everybody's clamoring to get the story. There were a lot of false reports.
Yeah.
There were a lot of people being like, all of his daughters were on the flight with him. It was only 5 people in addition to him. It was 7. It was 9.
Yeah.
It was like the numbers were all over the place.
Yeah.
It was just really irresponsible, in my opinion. I understand that that's the point. But I had something very similar happen in my personal life that it makes me furious because it's just so disrespectful to the families involved to need to break this story so badly that you
that you spread false information.
Yeah, or that you're the one to give that news.
Yeah.
To, you know, Vanessa Bryant and her daughters.
Yeah, it's just it's not ethical journalism at all. Like, it's just very unethical. My friend actually worked for TMZ for a day and he was like, "No, I can't do this."
Yeah, no, it's awful. And I remember thinking whenever I heard that there wasn't a helicopter crash, Anthony and I were talking about how cloudy and foggy it was outside.
I had too, because I was driving into downtown and we saw, like, we drove past Universal Studios and you can mm-hmm. see the big Minion and the Harry
right.
Potter castle. We were like, ooh, it looks so spooky. There's so much fog.
Right. It was overcast.
Yeah.
I remember thinking in the morning, because we were getting ready to go to Anaheim, because we went to Disneyland on Monday and we spent the night in Anaheim on Sunday night. And I woke up late because there was so much cloud cover.
Yeah.
So I wondered, like, why were they flying in the first place?
So my understanding of that is that they basically made a special trip. Like, they weren't going to fly. The pilot said, you know, it's really foggy, but they kind of convinced the pilot, from what I've heard, that it was a good idea. And they were flying really, really low. And that's the thing, is they were flying low because they were trying to not get into the fog too much. But because they were flying so low and there was fog, they could hit something, you know?
Right. So what I saw was, it wasn't that the people on board convinced the pilot to
fly. I don't
think
it was the people on board.
Yeah. There was, so first of all, this is very standard for Kobe. This is his private helicopter. He takes it all the time.
And that pilot, too, is like his go-to pilot.
Right, that pilot is a very experienced pilot. What I'm questioning is why they did get special permission. So they reached out to the Burbank airport,
yes.
and they were granted special permissions to be able to fly in fog.
That's it.
I don't understand why they were given those permissions, because earlier that morning, LAPD took all of their helicopters out of the air. Because the vision was so bad. And what happened was, he was navigating almost entirely using like the technology, like sonar or whatever yeah. else they were using, because clearly like you his actual visibility was extremely low. And so they hit the mountain. They missed the top of it by like 20 or 30 feet. They were just flying slightly too low. And there's an investigation going on into who is responsible.
Yeah.
Or whether or not it was like a combination of things that made this occur.
Honestly, I feel like it's probably going to come out that it was multiple factors. I don't think it was just one person's negligence. I think it was maybe some pride, maybe some ego, like, you know, oh, we can still do this. We can still fly this. I don't know.
Well, I don't know, because I bet you if they had told him that he was not allowed to fly, he wouldn't have flown.
Yeah.
Because as a pilot, you can have your license revoked.
Okay.
If you fly in whenever you're not supposed to, when you don't have permission to.
Then so what? It would be someone at like the Burbank airport.
Right. It makes me wonder who all made that decision. Was there a combination of that being a bad decision? And then also maybe the pilot did one thing wrong and it was just the combination of those two factors, his limited visibility. I also saw that the helicopter was missing like an alert system that would have told them that they were too close.
He was relying on that technology and that alert system was broken,
right?
That's, you know, that's not good.
Yeah. So, I mean, it could have been a number of things. So it's interesting being in Los Angeles when this happened, because Kobe was incredibly important to Los Angeles.
Yes.
He was a hero to Los Angeles. He was a role model.
Yeah.
I've never seen personally a city grieve the way that LA has grieved.
Well, and what was crazy for me is, so I was in the audience watching the premier Grammy Awards, and I'm like on my phone whenever I can be refreshing, trying to get as much information as I can. And we are at the Microsoft Theater, which is where they usually do the Emmys. And then literally 10 steps outside the door is the Staples Center. Mm-hmm. And that's where the main Grammy Awards are held. And that's where the Lakers play.
Mm-hmm.
So I walk out with T at the end of the award ceremony, and there's posters and fans, and there's so many Laker jerseys, and all of the screens are lit up with his face and rest in peace. And it was such a weird thing, because there's this mix of almost like, it looks like everybody's going to prom. And then there's the people who are in these jerseys who are crying, and even the people who are dressed up are crying. And it was just like thousands of people. And it was the weirdest mix of people and events ever. Like, it was so, it was a really weird thing to feel like I was kind of in the middle of, because I was at the Staples Center.
Right.
It was really bizarre.
Yeah,
and so moving.
It was also just a strange coincidence that the Grammys were the same night held at the Staples Center, because I know that that caused a lot of anxiety.
Yeah.
For law enforcement, because of course people were flocking there.
Yeah.
To pay their respects to Kobe. And it, you know, it's just been kind of like an interesting few days, and there's been a lot of reactions to it. Before we get into that, let's talk a little bit about the victims of the crash.
Most definitely.
So, of course, Kobe passed away in the crash. He was 41 years old, which he died on Anthony's 41st birthday. So that was strange. His daughter, Gianna, was 13. She passed away. And in addition to her, there were a number of other people who were all going to the to a basketball
camp. The Little
camp.
Mambas. I actually have information on the other people that passed away. So the other people who passed in the crash were John Altobelli, who was a champion baseball coach, along with his wife Carrie and their daughter Alyssa. The other victims were Christina Mauser, Sarah Chester, Peyton Chester, and Ara Zabayan. So Christina Mauser was an assistant basketball coach who worked with Kobe. And she and her daughter were on the plane together, headed to the Little Mambas basketball team. Was it a camp or a game? I thought it was a game.
It was a camp.
Okay.
They do games.
Okay.
I actually don't think it was, it wasn't Christina Mauser's daughter. So Christina Mauser
I'm sorry. You're right. I'm sorry. Yes. So Christina Mauser was the assistant coach, but this is what I was reading. She leaves behind her husband, Matt, a 4-year-old, a 9-year-old, and an 11-year-old child. Peyton Chester was also a teammate of Gianna and loved basketball. Her mother, Sarah, was traveling with her, who unfortunately also passed away. They are survived by Sarah's husband, Chris, and their two sons, Hayden and Riley. And then Ara Zabayan was the pilot of the plane, who everybody says was known to be really reliable. He was an instructor. He was a very smart flyer. And that's why it was so weird to have him be the one where it crashed. He was, you know, Kobe's go-to pilot. And I read a bunch of different articles on multiple websites about the people who passed that weren't Kobe or Gianna, because I feel like nobody's really discussed them. Mm-hmm. But for me, the one that I've focused on the most in kind of my like grieving this week has been Gianna.
Right. I mean, this is devastating no matter how you want to look at it. You have full families, like the Alto Belli family. They lost both parents and a sister. There are other siblings in that family.
Yeah.
So their family has been wiped out, you know, almost entirely. You have the Bryant family, who lost a father, husband, and a daughter, a sister.
Yeah.
Then, you know, you have other families who lost the wife and the daughter, both are gone. So you have children left motherless, left fatherless. You have an entire team of people, the Mambas, who I'm sure are grieving the loss of all of these people who were very important to them.
Yeah.
And it's devastating no matter how you look at it.
It is. Literally every side of it is
It's
hurt.
Tragic, right?
Yeah.
So, okay, so let's talk a little bit about some of the reactions to this situation, because it's incredibly nuanced, and I actually had, I feel very honored that people thought to reach out to me. Some people on Facebook, people I haven't even met, reached out to me, and they were like, I'm having these conflicted feelings about the death of Kobe because I'm a rape survivor, I'm a sexual assault survivor, and I'm feeling conflicted about these things.
Yeah.
And can you talk to me about that? And so I did. I talked to them about it. I think it's a very nuanced, complicated thing to talk about.
And I have to say, I think that there are people who have handled that part of the situation very poorly. It's a conversation that I've had with Max a lot, because he had a lot of questions for me about, one, how I would discuss it today on the show, what my thoughts were.
Well, I think here's the issue, right? We have looked at things in a very binary way and in a very black and white way. And this is part of the problem. This is part of something that I feel like we as a culture need to move away from, this, cancel culture idea, this idea that things are black and white, because they're not, right? There are multiple truths that exist here, right?
Yeah.
And like, his legacy is complicated, and there is a right way and a wrong way to address that.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of criticism that I have seen coming from the black and brown communities that I'm a part of. I'm in several communities on Facebook groups that are just for people of color, and they're expressing how frustrated they are with particularly white women and the way that they've come to talk about Kobe, because there are simultaneous things that need to be respected that exist here. One of them, of course, is survivors of sexual assault and rape. Because I would encourage anybody who doesn't know to go and look up that case. I remember it.
It is incredibly nuanced.
And it is upsetting.
Yeah.
It is upsetting. And for the most part, any reasonable person, there are unreasonable people, but most reasonable people believe that he raped her. I mean, I don't think that there's a lot of debate about that.
There's some interesting evidence that I was unaware of. When I read the Wikipedia page all about just the assault, there is some interesting evidence where I can see where the defense was taking, if it had gone to trial, I can see where the defense was going to take it. That would have raised more question with Kobe, but it didn't go to trial. So I think that some of that evidence is missing. I do believe this woman 100%, and he admits to having sex with her.
I believe a lot of the evidence would bear out that he raped her.
I think that
he raped her.
Well, and even with the wounds that were found on her, mm-hmm. he was able to say, yes, I did that. So he never really said, well, first he said, I didn't sleep with her. And then once they were like, well, we have this, and you obviously did, he's like, okay, I slept with her, but I didn't rape her.
Right.
You know, and so, but there is evidence that shows that this woman was raped. I believe her when she said that Kobe is the one who raped her. And that is the thing for me. I either totally forgot or never learned of this case because I wanted to make a post on our page about Kobe passing away. And you brought it up where you were like, you know, let's wait till we talk about it because there is a lot going on. And that's when I started reading about it. And it is hard to admire somebody when you know certain facts about them, but yet also feel very sad because of all the good they did do.
Right. Well, you know, but that's the problem is that we keep looking at people as if they exist as good or evil,
it's
which
true.
Is just not the case.
But people, rape is something that's so evil. Like, that's hard for me.
Sure.
Like, if he had stolen things or if
but I believe that, you know, I believe that murderers can be, there's redemption for
that's,
them.
That's true. So that's 100%
like,
true.
And I'm not, I understand it's a very nuanced conversation. And like, where I was going with that is that I believe he raped her.
Yeah.
Like, I believed he raped her. I believed it needs to be part of his legacy. I believe it needs to be something that we can talk about. I believe that survivors can deal with that however they need to deal with that. And that nobody should jump in and try and silence them. I also believe that to black and brown communities, Kobe Bryant was a role model to them. And they are trying to figure out what grief and accountability looks like at the same time. And white communities need to give them space to be able to do that. You know, I just think that it's something that we all just need to be a little bit more patient about.
Yeah.
It needs to be discussed. It's not something that I think needs to be swept under the rug at all.
Right.
But there's been so much speculation on, like, my Facebook page. And I had a friend of mine is a victim of rape and abuse, and they made a Facebook post talking about how everyone on Facebook is speculating as to, well, his victim must feel this way because she's seeing him be lionized in the media, and that you really can't speculate as to how she feels because survivors of abuse and rape have very complicated feelings towards their abusers.
Right.
And we can't assume that she's happy he's dead,
no.
You know?
Or we can't assume, you know, that, I mean, you can kind of assume that maybe it's bringing some of it back because he's being in the media a lot, but you can't guess how a person
how
feels.
She's dealing with that.
Yeah. My big question here is, you know, immediately after his death, this conversation of his rape came up almost instantly. Do you feel that it was brought up too soon, or do you feel like it was brought up in the appropriate time?
I don't like saying this isn't the time, right? I don't like that. I think it's been used to weaponize conversations in the past. Mm-hmm. I think it's been used a lot in conversations of gun control and things like that, saying, like, this isn't the time or whatever. So I don't want to say that. I do want to say that I think some news outlets or some people on Twitter or social media, the way they went about talking about it was insensitive given the scope of this tragedy.
Right.
Right? Like, so I'm not saying that it shouldn't be in the conversation or part of his legacy or something that is brought up, but also the way that it was brought up, I feel like wasn't constructive. I feel like we could have a conversation about fame and about sexual assault and about victims and about believing women and having all of those conversations that could be really constructive. And that's not what I was seeing on social media.
I think you just put it into words how I was feeling because I asked that question because I was struggling with how to eloquently put how I was feeling. And I think that you kind of hit the nail on the head because it's not about silencing people and telling them that it's not the time to discuss it. I think it is about the manner in which it is discussed. And I think it's also about being thoughtful of the other members of that flight who passed away, where I don't want, that side of Kobe Bryant needs to be explored, but there is so much tragedy in one that it almost feels weird to be focusing on this one person in this one part where we can focus on that, but also be thinking about all the other people and the lives.
Right. And look, I have no sympathy really for rapists or murderers or whatever. I'm not trying to come across as if I do.
It doesn't sound like that to me.
But I also want it to just be understood that people are complex.
Yeah.
And you can be a good father and a loving father. And you can be somebody who advocates for women's sports and black communities. And you can be a beacon of hope for for marginalized people and also have done this really awful thing.
Yeah.
Like, these can all exist within one person.
Yeah.
And people are gonna grieve the way that they need to. And I think everyone just needs to give people space to do that.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah, I'm wondering, you know, my first thought when I was originally researching the sexual assault case was whether or not we are going to have more women come forward and say that they were abused by him. I feel like that's something that tends to happen.
I feel like it would have happened already.
I feel like it would have as well, and that has kind of helped me process the information that I've read and, you know, to figure out what his life looked like after that.
Right. You know? I mean, and from what I've seen, he did manage to change. That doesn't, I think what upsets people is that, yes, he paid her restitution, and that is a form of justice, but it's not the kind of justice that we wanted to see done in this case.
Right.
And I also think that there's a bigger conversation to be had about entitlement and sports culture that needs to go on.
Yeah.
Because there could be a reality in which Kobe didn't think that he was doing anything wrong.
Exactly.
Because
well, he said as much.
Right, because sports stars, we've given them so much leniency, and we've allowed them to get away with so much for so long. He was playing in the NBA at, like, 18.
It was 17.
Yeah, he was really, really young.
Yeah.
And so it's like,
he was raised in that world.
He was raised in a world where he could get away with whatever. And it's not an excuse.
It's not at all.
At all.
It's really not an excuse.
But it is an indictment on our culture for what we allow men of privilege, no matter what it is, especially sports athletes, to get away with.
Well, it is not even just the athlete themselves, it's the fans, because one of the big reasons why this never went to trial was because the accused wouldn't give testimony because she was getting so much backlash and hate mail.
And his lawyers played very dirty. Like, this case,
real dirty.
This case is really upsetting.
I mean,
I see why it's triggering to people who are victims of rape. I see that because the way this woman was treated. So first of all, they were not supposed to, she was supposed to remain anonymous.
Yeah.
And his defense attorneys were instructed never to use her name in court. They said her name something like 3 or 4 times in their opening statements. And then they were like, whoopsie, accident.
Oh my God. So
of course she was targeted.
Yeah.
And you know, this case is terrible. It's there is no sugarcoating it. I believe her. I believe he raped her. I believe it needs to be part of his legacy. I also believe that this was a sudden tragic loss, that there is psychology behind people grieving people they've never met before.
Yeah.
And while I was not a sports fan, I don't really care that much about Kobe. It was still shocking to me, but it wasn't, I didn't cry. I didn't grieve like that. But I also don't belittle people who do, because, you know, I was watching the news, watching full-grown men in tears.
I was crying. I got home Sunday night, and it was on ESPN, and I made myself watch this for, like, an hour and a half. I just felt like I needed to know everything. I felt I would feel weird changing the channel. Like, I felt like I needed to watch this. And it was the things that were spoken about Gianna that really got to me. And I just cried. I cried a lot. And it wasn't necessarily even because I'm a big fan or I'm a, you know, whatever. It was just the knowing of the loss that these people have experienced and thinking about the people in my life.
Well, yeah.
And it's overwhelming.
And that's something that people also need to take into account, because I've seen, again, so many black and white kind of analyses about Kobe and, like, why are we sad a rapist died? And, you know, and the thing is, that person was still a person, a complex person who did good and bad things, and his family is going to mourn him. I'm sure there are people in your life who did awful things that you still love and would still be sad if they passed away. And in fact, I'm sure that there are men in your life, grandparents, fathers, who have done things that you don't even know about.
Yeah.
If you knew about it, of course it would change the way you look at them in one respect, but you would still mourn their loss.
Yes, of course. You know what I mean?
Because you love them.
Yeah.
And so grief is complicated. And I just urge everyone to just handle everybody with a little bit of compassion here, because when we're talking about intersectionality, it needs to be understood that some of these people, like for me, it was Michael Jackson, right? Like I have to come to a reckoning about like someone who meant so much to an entire community, the Black community, what that meant. Bill Cosby was the same way, right? Uh-huh. What that meant to us as a community, what it made us feel like we could be, you know what I mean? Like all of those things, having to grapple then with your entire childhood, having to figure out what accountability looks like and where you want to draw the line.
Yeah, what your lines are.
And you have to give people space to do that. And you also have to give people space who are triggered by seeing somebody who committed a violent sexual assault be praised.
Yeah.
Like, you need to allow those people. Don't silence those people. And don't silence these people. We need to come to a place where we can come to the table and have a good conversation.
Yeah, well, and I think that when we're talking about grief, that's something that is very often scrutinized, is how people grieve. And everybody thinks they know the proper way that a person should grieve a certain event or a certain person. And I think that it's a lot of people getting into other people's business. It's like, let people grieve and think about this the way that they choose to. You don't need to prove somebody wrong or say that they're doing it, that they're grieving the wrong way.
People are entitled to their feelings.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, I did have people message me privately and say, like, this triggered me and it's frustrating to me because no one will listen to me about, like, why we should talk about this.
Yeah.
And that's frustrating. And, like, you should allow that person to be able to have their feelings and say, I'm triggered by this and this is why.
Yeah.
And take that in. Absorb that.
Exactly.
And then you process it however you need to. There's no need from either side to jump in on someone's post where they say they're grieving the death of someone who they admired and say, you're dumb for grieving this because he was a rapist.
100%.
And there's no reason to jump in on someone's post who was a victim of sexual assault and say,
how dare you speak this
talk
way.
About this right now. Like, honestly, both of those things can exist and we can let it go. Leave it alone. And then someday soon, when the wounds have healed, we'll have a comprehensive conversation.
I think that's a good way to go about it.
You know, like, because I just think it's the only way. And there have been some really great, I was going to read them, but we're running long, but there were some very good analyses about this and how it all can exist within an intersectional lens on Facebook. There were some really good things. So
I think what you just said encapsulizes all of that.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, that you made a lot of really good points, especially on things that I was maybe feeling questionable about, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's complicated. It is. Yeah. Anyway.
It's very complicated. Well, do you have something a bit lighter that you'd like to end with?
I do. So last week we talked about DeAndre Arnold, who was the teen from Texas who was not allowed to walk in, or would not be allowed to walk in his graduation if he did not cut his dreadlocks.
Yeah.
Well, he appeared on the Ellen DeGeneres show, and Alicia Keys actually came out and presented him with a $20,000 check because he is refusing to cut his dreadlocks, and so he is not allowed to go to school or walk in the graduation because he's not in compliance with the dress code or whatever.
Wait, so if he can't go to school, is he even going to be eligible to graduate if he's not finishing his year?
I would hope that they're sending him homework at home to do. To me,
because he's suspended, right? He's not expelled, so he can still get the stuff.
That would be what I would assume. If they don't let him graduate because he's not in compliance with the dress code, I would be appalled. Yeah. More appalled than I actually am.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't understand how he's been going to this school for however many years and just now this is a problem.
I know. They were like, oh, it's now too long. Before, yesterday it was fine. Today it's too long.
Right. And so, you know, him and his family were addressing the school. Again, we talked about this last week, but this was something that just really tugged on my heartstrings as this boy, like, he's 18, he wants to graduate, and he said, I've worked for this all my life. I deserve this moment to walk across the stage and enter into life. My parents deserve this.
Yes.
So DeGeneres was talking to him and told him that she didn't understand why he wasn't allowed to walk in school. And she actually said, but there are girls in your school. Do the girls have long hair?
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, of course, you know, there are plenty of girls with long hair in my school. So then Alicia Keys appeared and she gave him a $20,000 check to go towards his college tuition. So that when he does graduate high school, at least that's one, you know, kind of relief for him. And I thought it was a really nice follow-up to last week.
Yeah.
We were talking about that. So it's like, I like that he's sticking to his guns. He's not caving in.
Because, exactly.
You know, I know it's just hair to some people, but it's really important to him.
Yep.
It's really important to his culture.
It's a cultural thing to him. Yeah. And that's the thing is that I've always felt it's just hair. Cut my hair, dye it, whatever. I don't have a strong attachment to it. But I do have an understanding of why people do get attached to their hair. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of reasons why hair is a very symbolic thing culturally when it comes to religion, or even just personally. You know, there are so many reasons why you can be attached to your hair. And the thing is it's your hair. So so me saying, oh, cut it, do whatever you want to it, is my choice, but it's also his choice whether, like, deciding not to cut his hair.
Right.
You can't force someone to let go of a part of themselves. Well, that's not appropriate.
A lot of cultures in which hair is spiritually important or culturally important, and I think it's so dismissive and just so archaic
to
say that, like, this boy has to cut his hair because he's a boy. Like, that's insane.
Yeah.
And to me, definitely racially motivated. They can say it's because of the length and not because of the style.
It's totally the style.
I bet you if it was a white kid with long hair, they would let it slide.
Yeah.
I bet you
they'd be like, tie it back.
Mm-hmm, exactly. You know? Put it back for graduation. But anyway, I still hope that he is able to walk in graduation.
Me too.
But if not, I hope that the $20,000 that Alicia Keys presented him kind of softens that blow a little bit.
Can I also say how much I love Alicia Keys?
Ugh, I love her.
Fucking love her.
Gorgeous.
She,
beautiful.
Oh, singing voice, appearance, heart.
Soul.
So good. Love Alicia Keys. Oh, you guys, thank you for listening to our very Kobe-themed episode. Hopefully you guys got as much out of it as I felt that I did. I feel like I learned a lot in this conversation.
Like, write to us and let us know what your thoughts are, because I know it's complex.
Yeah.
I know it's difficult. I'm not asking anybody to forgive Kobe, you know?
No.
So let us know what you think.
Valid. Yeah. Yeah. Please, please, please. You can email us all of your thoughts at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com. You can also direct message us on Instagram at @angryneighborhoodfeminist. You can catch us on Twitter at YANF Podcast,
YANF
Podcast. We have a Facebook business and group page. You can go ahead and rate and review us on our business page, and you can chat with our fellow ragers in the group page. You can also rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. We love it so much, and we are going to start doing Reviews Day Tuesday. This week was weird because I messed up and didn't upload the episode on Monday, so I did it on Tuesday, so we didn't do a Reviews Day Tuesday, but we will start doing that this week.
We will.
Most definitely. Mm-hmm. So if that's an incentive for you to write in a review, I say go for it. Now is the time. Also, feel free to listen to us on Radio Public if you don't already. It's a free way for you to listen, and it helps us out just a little bit. All right. That's everything we got for you today. With all that being said, we encourage you
to rage on.
Bye.